This is episode 57 of The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
And I'm Chris Palmer.
And we haven't done this in a couple of weeks. Good to get back together again. And the last thing that happened in the debate universe was CatNats. So we're going to talk about CatNats tonight. And two of us were not there, and one of us was there. So, Chris, you were at CatNats in Washington?
No, Baltimore.
It was in Baltimore. I'm going to Washington next week. That's why Washington's on my head. It was in Baltimore. I went to one in Baltimore a long time ago, which
97. I was there as well.
Yeah, I remember fondly restaurants in Baltimore.
Yeah, actually, we ate a lot of really good places. I was there as a minister without portfolio. I didn't have any students of my own. Lexington doesn't go to the CFL tournament.
That's right. You only have debaters. So I was going to say not even in speech, but you don't have any speech.
Right. There are no speech. So so I was just sort of wandering around, and I had dinner on Friday at this very good Tuscan restaurant with Ari Parker. Mm-hmm. And on Saturday, I went out with Joe Vaughn and his kids from Scarsdale, and we went to this great Mexican place a couple blocks away. And yeah, in general, it was very good food.
Yeah. Now, I remember that very well about Baltimore. I also remember being sent to some bizarre place in the middle of nowhere for the debate thing.
Oh, we had that too.
what I remember about the Baltimore venue, and this is tends to be true about, I think, a lot of the CFL venues, is that the speech people were at the hotel, and the debate people were as far away as they could send them.
That is not how it worked. We were at this year anyway. I was actually there for speech because they used my software to tab the tournament on the IE side. And so I was there to break something if it should catch on fire and start, you know, falling apart as we speak. And so the speech events were divided. One was at Loyola Blakefield, which is a school that competes in debate very heavily. Sure. And the other five events were all together at Towson University, which was about a mile away from Loyola, if that. And so I was up there at Towson. The debate events for prelims were largely scattered. I think they were, for the most part, closer. They were in high schools inside the city limits itself. Mm-hmm. But the downside of the debate events, from what I understand, is it was an unusually warm weekend, and there was little to no adequate air conditioning to be found at any of the three sites. And by far the worst of it, the LD site had AC, it just couldn't keep up with the temperatures. The policy site did not have AC, but was a relatively large and well-ventilated building. But the PF site was neither AC nor a large and well-ventilated building. It was kind of an old, small hallway building. And I gather it was so brutal that they decided to lag pair round 4 and 5, and no one said a word. They're like, sounds great. We'll get out of here an hour earlier, and that will prevent me from dying. Awesome. So, you know, there's not much you can do about that, unfortunately. A school is what a school is, right?
Yeah.
So, but still, it's unfortunate.
I mean, let's face it, how many schools around here, I mean, this is the Northeast, Baltimore's the Northeast, have air conditioning in all the rooms, you know?
Yeah, we're lucky at Bronx Science that we do. It's actually kind of shocking, but we do have air conditioning in every room. That's something our principal put. But it's
I remember really dying in your school.
Yeah, no, it's changed. It's there's air conditioning in every room.
No, yeah.
So what do you turn it off when I come?
I'll make sure it's on in your room.
I know. Remember which room?
I know what room you're in, and that room definitely has air conditioning.
Okay, good.
But LHS certainly doesn't. And I mean, it was not much colder. It was not much cooler in Boston that weekend than it was in Baltimore. So it's just global warming for the win, right? So
that was a couple of weeks. It was a nice warm weekend, actually. Wasn't
yes,
it?
Yeah. It got up to. Mm-hmm. It was in the '90s down there. It was in the '90s and humid. Yeah. So it's nothing to sneeze at. And then on Sunday for the Elim rounds, there are a number of hotels in the Inner Harbor area, and they're all walkable, 5-6 blocks at most apart. And all of the elimination rounds happened at one of those hotels in various events. Yeah. Congress were the lucky ones; they got to stay at the hotels, but. Hosting CFLs is tough. I mean, it's a very large tournament.
I know. I mean, we've talked about doing it in New York.
Yeah.
In New York. My senior year in high school was in New York.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did it. I worked in it once when it was in New York. But, I mean, our problem is not so much venues, because we have places we can go, but it's a question of hotels and finding and the award ceremony.
Yeah. You know,
so finding a really good place. I mean, like, we like Brooklyn Tech because it has like the largest auditorium short of Rockefeller Center in New York. But, you know, it's at Brooklyn Tech. And hotels and blah, 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 you know, and the city are expensive and everything. Yeah. So I don't know if we're on the docket yet.
There's no current bid for New York to host. I know that.
I mean, we had tried to get it. I think even this year might have been one year we were trying to do it. And I saw that Florida got it for 2014.
I don't think New York actually bid this year. I don't think there was a formal bid. I think
we may not have.
I think there was an intention, perhaps, but not a not an actual formal effort. But yeah, next year is going to be Philadelphia, and then the year after that is Chicago. And then 2015 is going to be Fort Lauderdale at Steve Chapas School, the university school. Right. They're going to host it. Nova Southeastern University is actually a massive campus. It's got like 30,000 students or something. So they can fit almost all the whole tournament there.
Yeah, and their school's out by then, right? So they have the place for themselves, right?
So, well, it's a college, so it's even more so. But yeah, hosting, it's rare for the CFL to be able to host its tournament within either one complex or even within the city limits of where it's staying. You usually have to sign up for a 40-minute bus ride because they just need hundreds upon hundreds of rooms. There's about more than 200 in each of six speech events. There's about 230 PF teams, about 200 even LDers, 100 and something policy kit teams. And then you add on to that the thousands upon thousands of hotel nights you need for all those people.
How does this compare size-wise to the NFL?
I think it's about the same. I think the NFL is a little bigger because they divide Congress into two, so you get twice as many kids there. And I think there's more policy debate. But from my impression, I think NFL events are largely 200-ish too. And they have six speech events. They're different six speech events, but it's the same number as NCFL. So yeah, I think they're in the same ballpark. I'm not exactly sure, but
I mean, the one thing I've always liked about CFL, which is also one of the things that mitigates against it on the debate side, is at least it's over quickly.
Yeah, it certainly is.
I mean, but the problem with that is you have that one day of prelims, and so you have like five rounds, and an awful lot of 4-1s don't break.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's nasty at a national tournament.
Well, it's even stranger than that in that they don't break it first on win-loss record. You've got three rounds, and you've got five rounds, and there are three judges in each round, and every ballot counts.
Yeah.
So it takes 11 ballots to break is usually the break cutoff. And you can be a 3-2 with 11 ballots, and you can, in theory, advance over a 5-0 with fewer. Because you can win five rounds with only winning 10 ballots if you're 2-1.
This has happened before, actually. I don't think it's in theory at all. I'm pretty sure that has happened.
So it's very much about winning every round and winning every ballot. It's not really about – and, you know, a lot of people will complain about the CFL about being all mommy judges. But, in fact, it'd be easier if it were all mommy judges. What you're more likely to get is mommy judge, circuit judge, and then – I don't know, college student who's still hung over or something, you know. So it's very, very much threading the needle. It's very strange.
Whenever I've been in those rounds, I mean, it has been exactly that. I mean, when I've been judging, it is totally, you know, such a mix of judges, not because they mixed the judges, but just by sheer throwing it up against the wall, which is what they do. You get a mix of judges, you know. Yeah. So I would be sitting there with that kind of thing. I mean, people who had never judged before had no idea what to do. And, you know, people who had been around a lot, you just never knew.
I mean, when you're putting together three judge panels for 200 debates, well, 100 debates, rather, you can imagine there is no effort put into whatsoever trying to make panels as such. They fall where they fall.
Yeah, they don't do mutual judge preference.
No. I can't imagine why not, but no.
I remember going there, and essentially, and this is LD a few years ago, they would put it all into I know they were doing this because this was the only way you could ever get this results. They would put it into Excel and who you were going to debate. And then they would just shift down the column one or however many it took to get you to the next school. And then so that you wouldn't debate your own school. And that's all they ever did. So your first three rounds were always against the same school.
They do not do that anymore, thankfully.
Yeah, no, that was like this is not what we would call random. You know,
yes.
I mean, it does, I'm sure it gets you through quickly enough, but
they certainly, I mean, getting five double flighted rounds in one day is tough, and it's even tougher to get five rounds in policy. Mm-hmm. Those buses leave at like, three in the morning, or I exaggerate only slightly.
Well, this is exactly why we don't go to CFL anymore in debate. For that is one of the biggest reasons. I honestly think, and I'm sorry if this offends anyone, because I happen to really like most of the people who run the CFL. That's not the issue. I happen to think that the tournament is unhealthy. And that actually was a breaking point for me. I sat there with my policy debaters at literally 5:30 in the morning, and I said, we can't do this anymore. It's not right. And my kids agreed pretty strongly. Not to mention that there was a budgetary issue where I felt like, a few years ago there wasn't an NDCA. There wasn't that considered in the budget. Now there is, and I think that's just for the debate.
Yeah, no, if you're doing debate, actually, you're there all day. I mean, you're there way more than 12 hours debating.
Right.
I
remember when Doug Jeffers was in finals of the NCFL. Doug Jeffers was in finals of the NCFL his junior year, so it would have been 2005. He debated against Tara Tetro. And I was with Doug at the tournament, and he forfeited his fifth round because we weren't being fed. And he was like, I'm exhausted, and I'd rather not break than go. And unfortunately, he won all his other ballots, so he did break, and he ends up being in finals of the tournament. But I feel like that says something if somebody who is in the final round of your tournament walks out of the prelims because it's too exhausting. Like that, Doug had a pretty serious work ethic. So.
Yeah, well, we train debaters. I mean, part of it is they do have – they got a lot of – whatever, because, on the second day of your average high school tournament, they start debating at 8 o'clock and they go to about 8 o'clock at night. So they have the marathon genes that can do this, but they also get fed and they get breaks in between and things like that regularly. So, it's not quite
well.
So
and
bad.
I'd also argue that as early as 8 o'clock can be for the teenage body, 5 o'clock is just that.
Yeah.
Worse. I mean, it's not a difference just in degree. It's a difference in kind. When you start asking teenagers to wake up that early, it's so far off their normal cycle and their natural body rhythms that it's not unforgivable that some of them just can't do it. So, to some degree, the kids would probably prefer if we started at 10 and went until 10 rather than starting at 5 and ending at 6.
There is a third.
Like, that's probably what they would like.
They get this whole thing done in 2 days, and they always do it on Memorial Day weekend, and there's another day. So what is going on here? It's just like you have the time. You could do it. You could spread it out. You could have another round the next Sunday morning, the last prelim, things like that. It's not.
No, I think it's
now. The rationale is that it's a national tournament, and so you need that day for travel. If you're running a tournament that's like Yale or something, you don't necessarily need to leave an extra day for travel because most of your competition's coming from a certain area of the country. But if you're a truly national tournament, then there are people who need a full day to travel afterwards and not miss school.
But, TRC is a national tournament, and it's 3 days. And, I'm going to leave on Friday, and I'm going to leave either late Monday or Tuesday for TOC.
TOC has fewer people in their entire tournament than the CFL has in the event.
All right, NFL. NFL lasts, 7 weeks? They don't give a crap. they do it during our school year, during graduation, and during our Regents exam, so they don't care about anything like that. So it's only this one tournament that says, we have to squeeze this in. And they really don't, because I don't think there is one person there that, if in fact the tournament went through Monday and they had to leave Tuesday, wouldn't be there. Yeah, it's their national tournament.
I don't know how big the number is, but I think there are some.
I suspect some teams are like their two national tournaments are NFL and NCFL, and they're already using all the time the school let them miss for NFL. So they're going to, that's what makes the NCFL attract them. Now, I have no actual proof to back that up, but I just suspect.
John, what do you? I hear you coming and going.
Yeah,
you're talking.
Your call quality is really bad, John. Yeah, you must sign out and sign back.
Crazy to say that because your call quality sounds bad to me. I'm calling you out, Chris Palmer.
Jim,
I don't know what that is. Jim sounds perfect to me.
Okay, you both. Why don't you both call back in, and I'll sit here and diss you.
Yes, now I can.
Okay, I can hear you. Okay, all right. Anyway, there are substantial numbers of schools that
treating TSL as their primary end of year goal. People who don't, you know, there's a ton of schools that are speech centric and don't go to the NFL for various reasons, be they structural, they can't do it during that time of school year or whatever, or philosophical, they just don't like the NFL for various reasons. And I don't know how much they would lose by adding an extra day, especially in IEs. I have a feeling it would actually be quite a, it would be a difficult thing to get through. It would not be an easy thing to do. So,
even if the thing just extended into half of the day on Monday and they eliminated this 27-hour thankathon, they would be able to get people out of there by noon.
No. I will actually let you know that the award ceremony was exactly 88 minutes long. They do not do nearly as much as the NFL does on the self-patting on the back. So they, thankfully, they've gotten a lot better about that.
They could have those 88 minutes some other time, and they could have these. There's ways of
The
one of the NCFL that I always think about with their awards is that actually they have the opposite issue of NFL. I never think that that award ceremony is too long. I think that the CFL award ceremony is confusing because they give some awards and I have no idea what they are or how they're calculated or what they're for because they're just named for people and there's really no explanation given about it. It's just funny that Jim would say it's so long. I've always felt like, make it 1 minute longer to actually know what these awards are that are being given out. Like, we won a sweepstakes award years ago, and I still don't know what it was calculated for. there you go.
Are we there? I'm hearing.
Yeah, I'm here.
The sound is bizarre.
Yeah. A little.
Someday we will find a replacement for Skype. That'll be our homework.
That'll be a great next business model.
Yeah, something other than Skype. Anyhow, one of the things I had heard, now you've got to tell me if this is really true, but did they really charge you for the judges' lounge?
This year they did, and this is one of the things that's, the thing about the CFL is it's really two tournaments going on at once. There is the tabulation and the management of the tournament from a competitive side, which is run by the National League and done pretty much the same every year with minor adjustments and changes that happen during their fall meeting in September. And then there's the local hosting effort, and this is one of the great pitfalls, but unfortunately the way it has to be for a league like the NCFL, in that the local leagues all host this tournament pretty much for the first time and learn their lessons as they go. So your hosts, that each city tries to do it a little differently, and that's one of the values of moving it around, is you get to try out new and different things. But their approaches may or may not be liked by the community, and by the time they learn that lesson, then it's not their turn to host anymore.
And they've forgotten it by the time it comes back.
Pretty much, yeah. But yes, the judges' lounge, the food in the judges' lounge was charged for. That itself is not out of the ordinary at CFLs because the entry fees for CFLs are quite low. They just can't afford to be supplying food for free for everybody, including judges. So judges have always had to pay for their food. The difference
this year,
you never
had food at the CFL. You were just starved to death, like we were saying before.
The difference is in the
tough
past.
It up. Tough it up,
there's
fella.
That. Well, it's very Catholic, but the in the past, what they would do is the schools would have to pre-purchase meal tickets.
Right, I remember pre-purchasing the sandwiches.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if you lost your meal ticket, you were done. You weren't eating that day or whatever. They have eased on that for convenience's sake, and what they're saying now is, well, just pay us when you buy the food. Which is easier if you work for a flaky coach who doesn't buy you meal tickets. But some judges are used to having their meals all taken care of, and that just didn't happen. And then I think they confused the school not paying them that they were coaching for, not paying them for their meal, with the NCFL not paying for it. Because the NCFL has never paid for judges' foods. So they can't afford it and charge $45 a competitor. So.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah. When you put it that way, it absolutely does make sense.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking back, because I remember ordering my sandwiches in advance and picking them up and all this kind of stuff. And I remember sometimes, too, I remember Milwaukee, for instance, we were in walking distance of, downtown. I can go get something to eat.
Milwaukee, there was a problem later in the tournament because they locked you out and wouldn't let you back in. I remember this specifically because this is why Doug forfeited his last round. He was like, whatever.
Huh. Yeah, well, I also remember every restaurant in town shuts down at like 6 o'clock at night because there's no business after 6 at night in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
In town. So, getting dinner was ridiculous.
That was true at Albany, too. We had trouble finding dinner places at Albany for that reason. Yeah. Baltimore, there's no trouble at all with that, but yeah. But yeah,
unless if you're the university, they ought to have places where you could get some. It's just the idea that I can go get a cup of coffee or something. I don't care that the tournament gives me the coffee, especially a big. I can understand. Yeah, I mean these places they can't provide all this stuff. But on the other hand,
especially
if I can walk to it, I'll go do it.
You know, if they were charging $80 a head or whatever, then yeah, I'd have a you'd have a complaint. But for the price they charge, it's kind of unreasonable to expect food. But I think there were people who had judged it before who kind of thought the food was free because it was free to them. Yeah. And so, therefore, it wasn't free to them anymore. And they were like, well, what the hell? I didn't get my free food. But
yeah, I guess if you're actually charging at the point of purchase, then it's like, what is this as compared to the fact we always were paying? Okay, that makes me feel better.
And that actually also points to one of the sort of broader issues with the NCFL tournament in that their communication channels aren't very good. Yeah. And one of the major reasons why is because it's all done through your local league director.
Yes.
You know, and so they don't actually have any direct contact with each individual coach. And depending on how on the ball your local league director is about every single little detail that they're told, they may not be able to get, you know, be either capable or even able to get all of the relevant information to their coaches. You know, even you have a great diocesan director. We have a good diocesan director.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But they're both speech coaches. Greg Cunningham in Boston and Charlie Float in New York are both speech coaches. And so they may forget that some policy thing is true and not tell their local coaches because it's irrelevant to them and they may not even understand what it is they're saying.
Yeah, they'll just miss it. They don't recognize the importance of it. Yeah, the other thing, but the organization. I mean, I never did find out who won a lot of the divisions. I mean, finally, the speech stuff got posted because your software will post that. The other stuff, I just asked Vaughn last week, like, who won, you know, because I was following it, and then I gave up, you know. I mean, I wanted to see how people were doing, and I knew, like a couple of people who were in it, but I didn't know who they were debating, and it's like, screw it, you know. I mean,
They posted it a lot earlier this year than they have in years past. The full results packet is up on taproom.com. And there's also ncflnationals.org was a website set up specifically for the results.
Believe me, I was following that particular thing, and they were usually a day behind.
Well, they were posted this year at 9 o'clock on Sunday.
9 o'clock is Sunday night?
Mm-hmm. Yep. As soon as the awards were done, they were up there, and I saw them. I promise you.
I kept looking for them, and I did not see them. So.
So. Well, maybe they weren't posted clearly, but I do distinctly remember them seeing them by at least by 10 o'clock. I might be exaggerating by saying 9, but I'm sure they were up by 10.
I have to admit, this is one of the things I liked about NDCA and that warm room business, because there was just no question about. You didn't have to do any. I mean, you had to do the warm room thing, which is like you hit one button kind of stuff. But you really didn't have to give it any thought. I like that a lot. I trust that you'll have that kind of functionality in your new system.
Chris. Working on it as we speak.
You know, because
excellent.
You know, that's good. Because, I mean, one of the things I'll do, I'll try to post all the schematics, and I'll try to post things like that, but you always tend to forget a couple.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just so much easier if it just happens.
Yeah, I mean here, just here, especially I'm in the groove now. So at NDCA, I would do that first, because the other thing is the judges get in the groove of, oh, I got to go get my ballots. So I'm going to do this first because I know this is the way the judges are being communicated with. Of course, there it was 98% of everybody was plugged in. I mean, the only people that weren't plugged in, there were these couple of schools that were there just by accident. They had no idea what was going on, and their judges didn't show up anyhow. But everybody else was immediately plugged in, and the people you would least expect to show up are always showing up immediately. It was great. Yep. You know, so, you know,
when you attach an electronic leash to everybody at the tournament, it works out really, really well.
But, I mean, when you have universities, you know, you can do that. And I think high school's more and more, not completely yet, but in a few years, I mean, we can have that expectation.
Well, then we're going to be eliminating the ballot altogether. I mean, they've largely done this in college, where they have online entry of the results and ballots, and so you don't even have to go back to the ballot table. You just go to your room.
I mean, like in NDCA in the prelims, there were ballots, and I stacked them and I gave them in. But in the elims, it was pointless, aside from finding out who won, because nobody said anything. There was one ballot out of 100 had anything on it whatsoever.
Yeah, and that's becoming the norm.
Yeah, which is fine because they're all talking forever. Everybody knows what happened. So,
sure.
You know, yeah. You don't need to get that. It's not like having novices and you want the information coming back to the coach. You know, this is their last tournament, their last round. The coach is there. You know, they can hear it from
themselves. Yeah, the coach is in the room for the most part.
Yeah.
That is actually one of those places where the NCFL very much does not resemble the rest of the world anymore in that there is no disclosure. There is no after round. You're not even allowed to call for cards.
Well, I always think of the year when the NCFL paired quarterfinals, one hits two, three hits four, five hits six, seven hits eight, and nobody knew because nothing had ever been disclosed.
Right.
And that was mildly painful. And that wasn't too long ago. That was Matinee's junior year. So that was 08.
Really?
Yep.
So that's after they computerized. That was Joy that did that.
I don't know what they did with that.
Yeah, they've been using Joy on the debate side for some years now. So.
Well, they must have been hand pairing the E-Wims. How else could that...
I will keep my mouth shut.
Okay.
We will not diss the competition. Yeah. But that brings up,
I could easily see that happening, though. I could easily see a bug happening, especially for such a unique tournament. There's no way that Joy doesn't have this massive amount of code that just says, if your NCFLs do this, and otherwise do this other thing. And there's a similar massive amount of code that does exactly that in Tab Room. So I can easily see that error being a perfectly forgivable computer error. So,
well, I mean, some tournaments are just different. I mean, most of the tournaments that we run are the same.
Oh, that wasn't intention. They're not supposed to do that. By no means were they supposed to pair it that way. They just did.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's once you start building a path for a separate tournament, it's just going to act differently. And when it screws up, it's going to screw up some new way that we're not used to. I'm used to. I mean, there's nothing TRPC can't screw up that we haven't. Oh God, is that again? We may not know. Don't. You know.
Be careful what you say, Mr. Medic.
Lexington was a new one on us where you entered the results and they didn't go in. Remember PF? That was odd. And we had to go in.
Two ones at Lexington. One that I hadn't run across with nine tier preferences and policy.
Oh, well. We know that doesn't work, though.
Well, no, it works in policy.
Right, it doesn't work in flighting.
But it turns out also, if you have nine tier preferences enabled in TRPC and you go into an ELIM round, you can't see the preferences. Once you break into ELIMs, you have to go back, change the setting to six-tier preferences, and then if you go in ELIMs, you can see all the prefs. And you have to just know that. It's not intuitive at all to try that out.
Oh, here, I have a question. At NDCA, did you have a setup so that there were only four levels and strikes?
Four levels and strikes.
I mean, in prefs.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, so there was four in strikes, and I mean, so could anybody, could you enter a five of some sort?
I swear for conflicts. But I think they got translated into strikes somehow. It's Joy, and I don't really know how to use Joy, so I mostly let Tim Mahoney take care of that.
Because what happened was, as I'm pairing this, I had either there one, two, three, or four, or sorry, which is great, because there's, in a way, six is almost too many.
Four. It was one through four.
Yeah.
I mean, if you tell everybody it's got to be one through four, or it can be a strike. And that's
makes
about
it.
Easy
enough.
Yeah, because that way, you know, five almost gives you too much variety in these things. And here you had a nice even. It was even, if I remember correctly. It was four even batches.
We
I like the four even batches and a handful of strikes.
As we've talked before, I'm a big advocate of having even preference tiers. So
I think that worked out absolutely fantastic.
I think it's nonsense to require half the field to be rated one and then crow to the world about how all your 1-1 pairings were wonderful. So
now, I can, believe me, I'm pairing it in a small tournament like this because I had like 50 kids or something, and I was very happy with the results over and over again because, you know, there was only four, so you would be able to find the mutuality there because they weren't all over the map.
Right.
It wasn't so bad. Maybe also people tended to be, for the most part, from the same schools of thought in terms of evaluating the judges.
Well, the new hotness that's coming down the pike is a holdover from the college policy world, which therefore Tab Room is going to have to support because we're pulling in debate results into Tab Room, and vice versa. is ordinal preferences, and this is a real mind blowing thing that I'm sure a high school tournament's going to start to use. Just
some high school, I think I'm pretty sure there are one or two high school tournaments.
Stefan
really wanted to do ordinal preferences. I think we did ordinal preferences also at Michigan in Palm.
How did this work again?
You just rate them all. If there are 81 judges, that you rank them 1 through 81,
and you got as close as you could.
Yeah. And then what the algorithm tries to do, and there's a gentleman named Gary Larson, who's a coach at Wheaton College in Illinois, who has worked the math out on this to the nth degree, where the algorithm just goes through and tries to minimize the gaps. But that is very much not something you can do adequately by hand. And the only sort of manual adjustment you do is with an eye towards not burning judges who are only in there for 2 rounds or something like that. That's a thing that no human really can do. That is a computer problem.
It sounds like since I can do the other and I can't do this, and there's not it doesn't seem to me like a great benefit that you're still going to get within like 5 or 6.
Removes the artificiality of the tiers, and that the possibility I might get my best one and you might get your worst one, and we call it mutual, but it's really not. And if you needed to give one fewer one, that person would be at 2, and it wouldn't be mutual. So you do get a sense of that. It's
But
I have a feeling it's especially useful in college policy because they know the judges very, very well, and it's a very closed circuit in a very smaller.
Do college policy judges, are they as
they're erratic? Highly specialized? Erratic,
as in LD or I think of LD judges as like how many rounds do we have that are 2-1 in elims from very good judges? I mean, is that true of college judging as well?
I don't know, really.
There's split decisions, but I don't know if it's because the judging is erratic. I think it might also just be because the rounds are of such high quality that
you're coming down to very low.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
If that's the case, if we're going to have people going to judge on this, going to judge on that.
When it comes down to it, you're any algorithm that can sort between 6 tiers or 9 tiers of preferencing well is going to be able to do so with an arbitrary number of tiers. And so the logical sort of extension of that, if you bring that to its logical conclusion, the answer is no, just don't have tiers. Why bother with tiers at all? And one of the very neat features that does actually tempt me about this is that debate results will maintain a master preference sheet for you as you go through the year. And so when you go to enter your prefs, what it will do is it will pull your concatenated preference list, delete out the judges who don't happen to be at that tournament, and give you a starter preference sheet based on what you've done before. And it will even go so far as to suggest ratings for judges that you have not rated before.
Yet nothing else in that website makes sense, so it'd be nice.
Well,
oh, that's John actually good. I like that.
Bresky will admit that he is not a good web designer when it comes to stuff like that. And part of
I'm glad you are.
Is that we are working together on that, and that is in my wheelhouse, and so I am mostly working on it. He's a great guy. I really like him.
Yeah, sure. No,
so anyway, he's built this system where it sort of will auto-pref, and it's like, well, you don't know this judge, but other people who like these other 6 judges the way you like them rate this judge this, and so you might want to try rating them that, which I think that's fascinating. I think that's really good. So
it's like a Facebook suggestion.
Yeah, you might be friends with this person, or
exactly.
an Amazon purchase suggestion, right? So,
the more I think about it, the whole ordinal thing isn't that terrible.
Well, as long as it's doing the math for you, it's not that big.
But sometimes it's not. I mean, there has to be something where it says, "Okay, this isn't so hot."
No, you know what? I don't believe that. I think we have been conditioned to believe that by Tabram, by TRPC.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, mixing and matching and finding an optimal judge placement is exactly the kind of problem that a computer is good at and a human is not. Because a computer can just brute force through thousands upon thousands of potential combinations and select the best one. Yeah. And the only reason we have to sit there and play that little dickety-doo game of moving judges around is just because TRPC wasn't set up from the ground up to do it. And Rich Edwards is retiring, and he doesn't want to put the huge amount of effort into making it better. And I don't blame him. It's free, right? So I disagree. I think that the computer is much, much better at this problem if we have proper software to do it.
Yeah, well, that raises the question, since the world is waiting with bated breath, where are you on your software?
I'm plugging away. We're aiming for an August 1st launch for registrations. and then tabulation by September 1st. So we should be ready for the next season, unless something goes horribly, horribly wrong. If something goes horribly, horribly wrong, Tab Room will still be there. I mean, I won't switch over to the new system unless we're ready. So it's not like we'll be able to take registrations from tournaments starting August 1st either way. But yeah, it's chugging along. I've developed a nerve problem in my hand, so my typing is not as good as it could be right now, but you know.
Actually, that's a good sign. That means you've been typing a lot. And
no, it's actually unrelated. It's not
oh, damn, I thought you were getting repetitive stress there. And I said, yeah. Good, you're working. That's what I want to see, you know.
No, there's two phases, and I'm almost done the first phase. I had to change the database in some fundamental ways to account for debate and allow for various things that debate needs. And then that required me to literally go through all of the existing code in Tab Room and update it to reflect the new database backend. And that's what I'm probably about 80% of my just tedious and awful and miserable but necessary work. And then once I'm done that, however, adding new features will go very quickly. And that will be the part where I get to add these new bells and whistles. And my goal, have I told you this vision? I believe it will be possible in about 2 years to have the tabless tournament. And what I mean by that is...
Oh, you're telling me about this.
All of the pairings are generated online. They automatically get sent out and emailed and texted to the judges. The judges enter all of their ballots and results by their phone or by their computer. And once the last result is in from the round, the next round is automatically paired and sent out according to the schedule you put in.
I like that.
It would be awesome. And so all of the time, all of the friction time in a tournament more or less can be eliminated. So, you know, people won't even have to leave their building. So that is my.
I mean, because that, let's face it, as in our, that is our human goal, is to turn things around instantaneously. And obviously we can't do it because you got to do printing and you got to do this, that, and the other thing. We come fairly close, though. So the idea of just eliminating that whole thing.
Come close, but there's still a good half hour, 45 minutes, especially if you're dealing with an MPJ round.
Yeah, I mean, what it is, you run the whole thing off, and then you're looking at the last handful and trying to solve those. And so,
and then you're printing, and then you got to send a kit up to the copier, and then you got to find the, you know, there's a lot of little sort of churn in there that, you know, either could be spent getting out earlier or getting round more rounds in, or just simply having more time to coach your kids before the round, you know?
Yeah, because you don't have to turn it around instantly. Yeah. You can... Yeah, give them some time and say, like what we did at NDCA. Okay, the round is actually scheduled for a half hour from now. We did turn them around very quickly, and so we just didn't.
And you know,
okay, and yeah, come up in 15 minutes. Yeah, enjoy your
national
moment.
National championship event. People are going to spend that half an hour talking to their kids anyway. You may as well just be honest about it and put that time on the ballot, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and if I remember correctly, that was actually built into the schedule,
right?
And which was good because we had no trouble turning them around.
Well, and then, to some degree, too, I think that if you release a pairing, say, at 5 of 1, and you put on it that the round begins at 1, then the round begins in this amorphous time between 1:20 and 1:40, depending on how much time. But if you release the pairing at 5 of 1, and you say the round begins at 1:30, then the round begins at 1:30.
Yeah.
Because that is a reasonable amount of time, and people feel like assholes if they take more. So,
but you realize this undermines Menick time. Like,
yes, I realize this. I have never been a philosophical proponent of Menick time, as you know well.
But it all depends on where you're doing.
Cruz is on
you know?
My side of that, I think.
Yes, I think at MHLs they work, but other
MHL,
than that, I agree.
It depends on the tournament. I mean, believe me, I know when people are going to show up and when they're not going to show up.
I honor Menick time at Bump because it's your tournament.
That nobody pays any attention to it anyhow. I mean, let's face it. I mean, people just sort of.
But that's Chris's objection.
But no, there's a different thing. Like in a your average high school tournament, the average rounds, most of the time, as soon as the ballots come out, everybody pretty much just starts, you know, kind of thing. You know, there's maybe a little prep at some of them. But for the most part, it just happens anyhow. So it doesn't matter what you say. Just go.
Well, my point is, though, if you say something that's patently ridiculous, everybody has a different definition of go.
Now, Menick time is not patently ridiculous most
of
the time.
Yes, it is.
No, sometimes it's
set rounds to start 10 minutes before the moment we're printing them.
Okay.
At 2:30, and you put 2:15 on that frickin' schematic, and I looked at you, and you're like, oh, it'll make them move faster. And I'm like, au contraire, sir, au contraire.
I would point out that that round is now over. Okay.
Yeah, about 10 minutes ago. So when you put a start time that's like 3 minutes in the future, then some people take 5 minutes and then some people take 30. But if you put a start time that's 20 minutes in the future, then everybody takes 20 and you know when your round's begun.
Yeah, realistically, MHL is a mature, nobody's talking to anybody. Just go to the next round.
If anybody's prepping for 20 minutes at MHL, they should be shot for doing it wrong.
At the average high school student, high school tournament, about 15 minutes to get a round going, I think.
In LT, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, then in ELIMs, that's different. You know, it's probably going to be more like half an hour. But I realize that, but you still want to keep them moving. Yeah, as much as people want to move too. Like if it's the last round of the day and they're going to be going home or housed or whatever, they want that one to go. So you want to get that one out. Just go. Yeah. So a lot of it just depends on which one it is.
Things, human nature being what it is, things also tend to speed up considerably once the bid is done. So
that's true too. That is absolutely true.
The bid round will take forever, but then after that, you could just move it along like it's business. So
that's true. All right, well, I'm going to suggest that we wrap up. We've been on for a while. This is pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about CFLs and my wonderful, happy tournament software that probably will now explode in flames because we talked about it so happily.
No,
it's going to do fine. And I'm ready to run it. I'm ready to help do whatever I have to do. So.
Well, we're going to try to go to a couple of policy camps and run their camp tournaments.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because if a camp tournament screws up, nobody really cares. It's about practice anyway. Yeah. So we're going to try to do that as a first pass and see how that goes. And then I will report back to the gentleman and see what we have to say. So,
well, like I said, once the season begins, we have a program of like tournaments where the worst case scenario isn't so bad that we could try it out on. So I'm game. No question about that.
Yep. I think the big date that circled in my head is Berkeley. I'm pretty sure we're going to be running Berkeley on it, and that's going to be an adventure and a half. But if we can get through that, we can get through anything. I think Berkeley is pretty much on a par with CFLs and Harvard and NFLs for size. So, we shall see.
Talk about the acid test. But by then, you should know. I mean, it should be working.
Why better? Yeah. There'll be a lot of pissed off Californians out there.
No, you stay back in Massachusetts.
Yeah, there you go. That'll be the year I actually go to Harvard, right?
Right.
I'll be at Penn. So
that's right. You'll be at Penn. You won't even have to worry about it at all.
Indeed. Hiding at Penn. So.
All right. Don't hang up. I'm going to turn this off. So I'm going to say goodbye to our lovely listener, wherever he is. Okay. All right. Good night, lovely listener, wherever.
Good night, listener.